Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today in this episode, I want to do something which I don't often do or ever potentially do, which is talk about medications and specifically talking about glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists, often referred to as GLP-1 receptor agonists or GLP-1RA, which are a class of medications originally developed to treat type 2 diabetes, but have since gained a lot of attention for their effects on weight loss and metabolic health. Some of you may be familiar with the drug Ozempic, which is often marketed and sold as a weight loss drug. And just to back up a little bit and say that recently I've had a few clients who've been interested in these drugs for a couple of reasons, essentially managing appetite, managing blood sugar, managing weight alongside their fatigue recovery journey. This has been actually, in the cases that I've been working on, been working quite well. But then recently, last month, there was a paper published which has suggested that these particular drugs may also be beneficial for those who experience mast cell activation syndrome or MCAS. And just to say here that at the moment, the research is currently very limited. So this podcast is specifically just going to go through like what we know so far and give a little bit of a background to the research or what we do know. Also just talk a little bit about my limited experience in clinical practice. Before we go into the rest of the episode, it's also just important to say that my degree that sort of underpins my insurance to practice is a master's in personalized nutrition. And on top of that, I have done my functional medicine training and my training in somatic experiencing amongst many, many other qualifications, which if you're interested, you can review on my website. But this means that I'm not a medical doctor, and therefore it is beyond my scope of practice to prescribe medications to clients. I can refer my clients to a doctor to discuss their medication or to discuss medication options. I need to be mindful of the interactions between supplements that I'm recommending and the medications my clients are taking, but I cannot tell a client to take a medication, and I cannot tell a client to stop a medication. And therefore, in the scope of practice and just in the context of this podcast episode, I'm not saying or I'm not recommending that anybody take these medications. It is really just about presenting the evidence, presenting my experience from clinical practice. And then if this is something that interests you or something that you feel could be helpful for you on your fatigue recovery journey, then this is something you can then go to your doctor or prescribing practitioner to discuss further. And that goes for any medication. And then maybe it's also worthwhile just saying that as a practitioner, my observation is that sometimes medications of all different types can be really useful. Sometimes medications of all different types could make no difference. And in some cases, they can even make people worse. And if you've been on your fatigue recovery or energy limiting illness journey for a while, you've probably had this experience with many different things. You've probably experienced that some things have made you feel better, some things have made you feel no different, and some things have made you feel worse. And so there is always going to be a certain amount of trial and error as we find our supports. Working with a practitioner like myself can hopefully help to shortcut that trial and error, but there's always going to be a little bit of a dance that takes place when we're trying new things and we're trying to move the needle forward. And therefore, there needs to be a certain amount of patience involved. So I just want to sort of pre-frame the episode with that little bit of chat. In the rest of the episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about what mast cell activation syndrome is. I have actually done an episode on histamine intolerance and mast cell activation, which was episode 42. So I recorded that one a very long time ago now. I probably even need some updating, but you can also listen to that one if you're not familiar with it. Then we'll talk about what these GLP-1 receptor agonists actually are and how they work and what they do, the recent research study, which has been published, and then some shares in terms of how this might apply to you and my experience, just seeing some clients who are taking these drugs in clinical practice. So if you are somebody who's wondering if a GLP-1 receptor agonist could be supportive in your journey, you might want to listen, stick around for the rest of the episode. Or if you just feel curious, or maybe even if you just like the sound of my voice, you can listen anyway. And as a reminder, if you haven't already, please leave a review either on Spotify or iTunes. You can just leave a rating of 5 stars on Spotify, on iTunes. You can even write a little blurb. And I'm seeing now on Spotify, which actually has been a thing for a while, but I've never mentioned it, is you can leave comments on individual episodes. So if an individual episode has been helpful for you, I would love if you could leave a comment on that episode. It's always wonderful to hear your feedback. So if you have a moment, you could do that now, or share this episode with someone you think it could be interesting, someone who you think may be interested to hear about this. And then other than that, let's go into the rest of the episode. So the first thing I'd like to cover is, what is mast cell activation syndrome? And mast cells are a type of white blood cell that are found in connective tissues throughout the entire body. Typically, though, mast cells are located in boundaries, so places where the external world meets our internal world. For example, the mucosal surfaces of the lungs, the digestive tract, and the skin. They can also be found near blood vessels, lymph vessels, and in nerves, which is why there can be this very close relationship between mast cell activation syndrome and our nervous system. Mast cells, when activated, produce a variety of inflammatory molecules, one of which is histamine. So histamine is the one we hear about most often, with histamine intolerance, following low histamine diet. But it's also important to acknowledge that mast cells have got lots of different receptor sites, and they produce lots of different inflammatory molecules, not only histamine. But histamine specifically is an immune signaling protein that causes allergies and swelling, and it may affect many different tissues throughout the body, which means that it's not always immediately obvious to some people that their symptoms are being histamine driven or driven by mast cells. Mast cells, as I've said already, have lots of different receptor sites. And when they become triggered by many different things, as a consequence, the ultimate end game, as the mast cells get triggered, is an inflammatory impact in the body. So that can happen to anyone at any time. You perhaps get stung by a bee and you have a bee sting and you get swelling. That is a mast cell which has been triggered. But mast cell activation syndrome, or MCAS, is when mast cells become overly responsive and easily triggered, and therefore they release a lot of histamine. And remember, they can release other inflammatory molecules too. So this is usually the consequence, or the creation of the mast cell activation syndrome is a consequence of frequent or long-term activation due to, for example, an ongoing infection, allergic reactions, toxin exposure, one of the main ones being mold and mycotoxins, and even chronic stress. So the idea being that there can be a lot of different things which are triggering these mast cells. It's usually not only one thing, although it could be. So someone is very stressed, they have a history of allergies, they have a mold exposure, they have a toxin exposure. This causes the bucket to overflow. And this constant activation across time means the mast cells lose their discernment. They start to struggle to differentiate between this is safe, this is not safe, this is safe, this is not safe. And everything starts to appear unsafe. And then the body becomes highly reactive. So you start to react to foods, supplements, light, noise, heat, exercise, smells, skincare products, whatever it might be, even little stresses can then start to create this inflammatory storm. So not everyone who experiences a chronic illness will have mast cell activation syndrome, but it is estimated that about 50 people with chronic illness may have mast cell activation syndrome or histamine intolerance. And therefore, it can be common territory for people who are navigating chronic fatigue, post-viral fatigue, long COVID, energy limiting illness, autoimmune conditions. We have to at least consider that the mast cells and histamine may be playing a role, even if that's not true for everyone. So now you know a little bit more about mast cells. Let's talk about these GLP-1 receptor agonists. So as the name suggests, GLP-1 receptor agonists mimic the action of a peptide known as glucagon-like peptide 1. And this GLP-1 is a hormone naturally produced in the gut, and it's primarily released after eating, and it plays a role in regulating blood sugar and appetite levels. So GLP-1 works by stimulating the pancreas to release insulin, and this helps to lower blood glucose. And it also helps to suppress the release of glucagon, which is another hormone which can raise blood glucose. So this is what helps to bring blood sugar down when blood sugar is high. And this is why this drug has been used for people with diabetes, for example. It also suppresses appetite and increases signals of satiety, because people who overeat or eat too much tend to gain weight. That can cause insulin resistance, that can cause blood sugar imbalances. So if we're not overeating, that can also be supportive for metabolic health. It slows down stomach emptying, which slows down the release of sugar into the bloodstream. And this can also help people feel fuller for longer. So just another mechanism by which it can help with satiety and prevent overeating. And it may also increase the function of beta cells, which are the cells on the pancreas that produce insulin. So what has this got to do with mast cells? Well, GLP-1 receptors are present in many different cell types, including mast cells. Some prescribing professionals have noted that when prescribing GLP-1 receptor agonists for individuals with diabetes and mast cell activation syndrome, so people who have mast cell activation syndrome as well as diabetes, that the individuals also experienced improvements in inflammatory responses connected to MCAS. So they were taking the drug for blood sugar regulation and appetite control and all those different mechanisms that I've just described. But when they did that, they also had, call it in air quotes, unexpected improvements in inflammatory symptoms that were more put in the category of the MCAS. Now, we know that blood sugar imbalances, insulin imbalances all drive inflammation in the body. So it's not really hugely surprising, but it's still an interesting connection. And recently, in July 2025, a study was published, which was a respective case series. So essentially what this is it's a type of research where they look back on a group of people who have already been diagnosed with a particular condition and treated for a particular condition, and then they report on the findings. So in this case, the retrospective case series reported on 47 subjects who have been selected and definitively diagnosed with MCAS. And of these 47 subjects, 89%, so almost 9 out of 10 of each, you know, if you had 10 people, 9 out of 10 saw a multi-system improvement within days of taking the GLP-1 receptor agonists. And in some cases, the improvements were observed within a 24-hour period. These improvements were related to symptoms that were inflammatory in nature. So that's a pretty significant improvement. Imagine some of the inflammatory symptoms you may have right now relating to your MCAS, and if they could be managed within 24 hours, that would be pretty remarkable. But the study concluded that there may be a clinical benefit to GLP-1 receptor agonists and MCAS. But remember, the study was observational, which means there was no control group. A control group is a group of people that don't get the medication, and then they're compared against people who did get the medication to see if the difference between the two was significant or not, or statistically significant or not. Therefore, more research specifically using randomized controlled trials, which is kind of seen as the gold standard in research, would be needed to determine the efficacy of the GLP-1 receptor agonists and MCAS, and also optimal dosage. However, as I've said already, these results are pretty promising and worth a shot potentially if you're a good candidate. So what does this mean for you if you suspect you have MCAS or you have MCAS? And so it might mean that you actually want to discuss this study with your doctor, with your prescribing practitioner. I'll link to the study in the show notes so you can find the paper. As with any medication, and I've said this already, we have to be aware that there are side effects. So GLP-1 receptor agonists are commonly used as a weight loss drug, and side effects that are most common include gastrointestinal issues such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, and abdominal pain. If you've already got some digestive imbalance that you're working on as part of your healing journey, this could potentially cause disruption to that. If you are underweight, or if you struggle with low blood sugar, having your appetite suppressed or taking a weight loss drug may not be the best fit for you. But if you're somebody who is overweight, who has higher blood sugar and is struggling to lose weight, it could potentially be something which is helpful and supportive. So as I said, my experience in practice is limited. It's not beyond my scope of practice to recommend these drugs, but I've had clients start taking them while we've been working together. So they haven't come in already on the drugs. We've been working together, and then they've taken the drug, and then I have seen, you know, what improvements they've experienced. And so far, I would say the limited number of results I've seen have been really positive, especially for those people who need to lose weight, who are struggling with blood sugar imbalances, and also with food compliance. Because following a low histamine diet, in my opinion, is probably one of the most difficult diets to comply with. But loads of people struggle with dietary compliance in terms of just eating too much sugar, the common things that a lot of people battle with. And I have seen when people take these drugs that they are then able to comply better with their dietary restrictions because they have less cravings, less binging. And as a consequence of better compliance with the protocol, they are improving their capacity, they are making more gains, and they are experiencing a reduction in inflammatory symptoms. It's hard to say for sure if that reduction in inflammatory symptoms is from the compliance or from the drug, as suggested by the study. But either way, what we're seeing is that people are doing better when they've been taking these drugs. So it could potentially be something that is really supportive. And it's been really interesting to have these clients and work with them in this way and then be able to report that back to you. So I just want to conclude here that there will always be a certain amount of trial and error when working on chronic illness. And although these results look promising and have potential for a positive impact, there's always a chance that a change in medication can make you feel worse. And it's important to go in with your eyes open, knowing that there's actions and potentially negative consequences. It's also always best to make changes from a place of stability. You've probably heard me talk about the concept of stability again and again and again on this podcast. And it ultimately means that you want to master what I call the foundational five. And the foundational five refers to my methodology of the things that I've identified to be the most important in terms of managing and stabilizing the body and the system. And this includes stabilizing your nervous system, stabilizing your blood sugar, pacing and having a good routine, good stable sleep and circadian rhythm, and managing inflammation. However, that being said, stabilizing blood sugar and managing inflammation are two things that this drug could potentially help you with, but maybe just to make sure you're in a good place to trial something, whether it's the drug or something else in your journey, you might want to have some other foundations which relate to those categories and the categories that I've also mentioned, the nervous system, the pacing, the sleep. You also want to make sure you've mastered that. Recently, or probably not so recently, by the time this episode goes live, I created a free quiz or updated the quiz that was already free on my website so that you can take the quiz and then it will show you which one of these foundational five is the most balanced for you, which one is the least balanced for you, and which ones you might need to work on the most. So if you are looking to stabilize yourself in your fatigue recovery journey and you haven't already taken the updated quiz, which was about end of June, I updated the quiz, then that would be a wonderful thing for you to do. So I'll put all the links in the show notes, but I hope you have enjoyed learning a little bit about this today. As I've said already, share it with someone who may find it useful, and I will see you in the next episode.